You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. And you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_beeble and on Instagram at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. We are continuing our Dynasty Watch series of shows. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. And we're going to start off by talking about the Chicago Bulls here. I am going to bring in one of the hosts of the Locked On Bulls podcast to talk about one of the Bulls players. So we might as well get into that right now. So now let's bring in Matt Peck, the host of the Locked On Bulls podcast. And we're going to talk to Matt about Daniel Gafford, a second round pick from the Chicago Bulls. I thought looked really good in summer league. We saw him out of the rotation to begin the season with Luke Kornet getting those backup minutes, but then he forced his way in, and just when it looked like a big role could be coming, an injury sort of derailed that, but he settled into that backup role now behind Wendell Carter. Matt, what have you been impressed with the most with Gafford this season?
Well, I think you have to say his motor. He's pretty basic with what he knows how to do on the offensive end, especially. He can set screens and he can roll to the rim, and he's a good roll guy. Obviously plays above the rim very well in a way that can really excite the crowd. His offensive game beyond that is fairly limited. You know, he's an old school big man. He hasn't really developed any perimeter element to his game offensively. But what he does well, and that's attack the basket with ferocity in the pick-and-roll game, and then on the defensive end, he blocks shots like crazy. He didn't get a whole lot of statistical accolades because he was only averaging about 14 minutes a game in just 43 appearances. Boylan had him out of the rotation to start the season, as you mentioned. But when you look at his per 36 minutes, he was averaging 3.3 blocks per game per 36. So I think there's a huge ceiling there for him to be a force at both ends.
He was also shooting over 70% from the field. Now, I guess the worry in terms of can he translate to any spacing is that he's a bad free throw shooter. He's 53% there, shows no real inclination to do anything outside of dunking. Very, DeAndre Jordan-like in that sort of a situation. But you know, the Bulls have already got their center of the future, who now claims he wants to be a power forward in Wendell Carter. So how does that work out? Could a Carter and Gafford pairing work at all if the Bulls do decide to move on from someone like Lauri Markkanen? Could Gafford ever, do you think, have the potential to be a number one option ahead of Carter? Like, he's got that real defensive ability. He gets up for lobs, but is there enough there for him to be a starter in this league on this team? Do they view him that way?
Yeah, I don't know if they see that much potential with Gafford to really expand upon his offensive game, so much so that he might leap Wendell, or that they would say, we feel comfortable with playing Gafford as our starting center. We're going to let Wendell do what he wants and slide him to the four, and because Lowry has been a disappointment, we're going to try and trade him and get what we want for him. I think from what I've heard, the Bulls are going to keep Lauri Markkanen in the fold. They still value him greatly, and they're just going to try to readjust what they've done this season, especially with Jim Boylan's offensive system that has basically left Lauri Markkanen for dead as a spot-up shooter in the corner. Markkanen has told Chicago media that himself. I just don't see a whole lot of potential for Gafford to be much more than a pick-and-roll guy who can set screens and roll to the rim. You mentioned the free throw percentages, and he really has no semblance of mid-range game, where at least in limited glimpses, we've seen Wendell Carter Jr. be willing to hit that mid-range shot, to take that mid-range shot. Unfortunately for him, and Bulls fans wanted to see him expand his offensive game this season, Boylan was really adamant about eliminating that mid-range game altogether. So you only saw Wendell take those mid-range shots every once in a while. But I think Wendell's offensive ceiling when it comes to expanding his scoring around the rim is higher than Gafford's still.
Yeah, I can't see really any argument to the contrary, but I have seen that. You know, I bring this up because, you know, people talk, oh, yeah, Gafford's going to become the Bulls starting center. From a fantasy basketball perspective, people think this because of those high block numbers, but overall, I just don't see him as ever being a starter ahead of Carter, or really even in the league. And even if he did go to a different situation, it might be like a 1 or 2 year stopgap center situation where someone overpays and they've got no other options, or someone gets injured and he plays in 26 minutes a night for a year or two. I think he's still pretty strong, and those blocks can come in really high numbers. But you know, being a big minute starting center, it is hard to sort of see that projection from him at this point, despite, you know, some of the obvious physical gifts that he has. And I think, Matt, we have to also mention he is actually older than Wendell Carter as well. So that's, always assume draft year versus age, or take that idea on, but he's actually older than what Carter is. So further along in that developmental age curve, which isn't always linear, but that is something to pay attention to. So Matt, I do thank you for coming on and just giving a bit of an insider perspective onto Daniel Gafford. Thank you for coming on, and everyone should go check out Locked On Bulls.
Thanks a lot, Josh. Appreciate it.
Sports have come to a screeching halt with basketball benched and pitchers off the mound, but our friends at MyBookie aren't going to let it get you down. Stay sane and stay entertained with access to your favorite games like blackjack, roulette, slots, war, and more. It doesn't matter whether you're out on the front lines or quarantined at home, the fun doesn't have to come to an end with MyBookie. Video poker not your thing but still need a fix? They've got you covered with a host of live casino dealers online. That's right, they have professional dealers at their tables, live on site 24/7. Your favorite squad sidelined because of the pandemic? Don't even sweat it. MyBookie has partnered with some of the leading esports brands to bring you wagers on virtual action straight from the court in NBA 2K20. Plus, you can always do your part to make your bankroll great again by taking advantage of shifting odds on political bets. You can trust the industry leaders in times like these. They're reliable, upright, and best of all, they pay fast when you win. Visit mybookie.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 150% bonus on your first casino deposit. That's promo LOCKEDONNBA to receive a 150% cash bonus on your first deposit. And you can claim those extra funds all the way up to $750. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. You spin, you win, you get paid. All right, let's move on to talk about the rest of the Bulls now. And I will go on to talk about Wendell Carter Jr., who I think has been somewhat of a disappointment this season, the 112th ranked player overall. Again, injuries have been an issue for Carter. Hasn't even got to 30 minutes a night. Some of that due to injuries, some of that due to the absolute shit muppet of a coach, the Shadow King Jim Boylan, that has put restrictions on him. I don't understand where his three-point shooting has gone. He was a good three-point shooter in college and has been discouraged from taking them and can't hit them either. He's attempted 0.7 threes a game this season and hit him at 21%. Now, he hit him at 19% last year. But again, in college, he was like a 34, 40. Let me double check that, because I'm pretty sure he was close to a 40% shooter in college. I probably should have had that data on hand before I started talking about it. But I know he was better than a 20% shooter that he currently is in the NBA. Let's have a look. 41% shooter at Duke. Now, only a 1.2 attempts per game. But he does have that ability. He's got the ability to pass as well. The ball's been taken out of his hands, and he should be able to facilitate a little bit more. There is still a lot more upside, but it has been not a great year from Carter. The block rate has dropped down from him as well. At least the field goal percentage jumped up, which is, I think, where it can sort of stick. And his free throws drop down. This is a perfect opportunity in a dynasty league, I believe, for Carter to buy low on him. I think he's got a lot more there. Now, again, I don't think anybody would be looking at Jim Boylan and thinking, well, he's the guy that's going to be leading this team in the future. So, you know, whatever restrictions he places on his players shouldn't be something that penalizes them long term. I still believe in Carter to be a potential top 30, top 25 player in the future. It's probably a couple of years away, but there is a lot of room for him to improve in multiple different areas, and I think we should be looking at that. But he had obviously a bit of a disappointment from him this season. If you want to talk disappointments, let's talk Lauri Markkanen as well, who had some struggles. The advanced stuff actually doesn't mind what he did this season. His PIPM on defense was a positive. Now, it wasn't as good as Carter's, which is pretty strong. Now, Carter was a negative offensively. But Markkanen, for as much shit as he's copped this season and the injuries, overall, his season not too bad in terms of those advanced numbers. What does that mean moving forward, and how can he become a better fantasy player? Well, he has a lot of issues with his fantasy game because of the defensive stuff. 0.8 steals, 0.5 blocks is all he's averaging, 43% from the field, under 2 assists. They are all not good numbers. He's the 100th ranked player overall. He's playing under 30 minutes a night, and as Matt said, you're being relegated to a spot-up shooter. He is much better than this, but he's also not ever going to, I don't think, push into top 30 or top 40 discussions because of that lack of assists, steals, blocks, low field goal percentage. He'd need to become a 22, 23 point per game scorer and hit three threes a game with seven rebounds, which I guess is possible, but I don't really buy into that as a long-term thing for Markkanen to get to. But like Carter, we're talking about a situation where his stock is probably at the lowest it's going to be. I think in 4 or 5 years' time, we could look at him maybe as being a solid enough top 50 guy for maybe a 3 or 4 year period. But yeah, with what's happened this season, it's obviously a big downturn. Now, a lot of people are going to be super hyped about Coby White. Now, we can talk about Markkanen and Carter's dynasty value being lower, which I believe it absolutely is. White's, on the other hand, is going through the roof. Now, he is still only the 196th ranked player this season. 26 minutes a night, 13 points, two triples on 39% shooting at 79 from the line. It does skew things a little bit considering just how well he had started to figure it out, and just before the shutdown of the season, he was put in as the Bulls starting point guard. Now, he has quite a few issues defensively. He has quite a few issues in terms of running an offense. But over the last 2 months, over the last 10 games, he was the 38th ranked player because he was shooting 47% from the field and averaging 25 points per game. There's quite a bit there that I don't think is realistic. He was at 30% usage, some of that time without LaVine, some of that time without Markkanen, some of that time without Otto Porter. And he's not going to get that free of a rein. But the thing that concerns me is the abysmally low steal rate, the abysmally low assist rate as a starting point guard as well, and where that efficiency levels off at. Now, will it stick at 47%? He was hitting 41% of his threes. Of course, he can do that. I don't really have a concern with that. 52% of his twos, I guess that's somewhat of the concern that I have for White. He's a negative overall PIPM player, a negative wins added player for this team as well, because a lot of that defensive issues, and a lot of that is skewed from the beginning of the season and how poor he was there. So if we just look, say, over the last 10 games, how much his PIPM changed, I think we'll see a pretty significant difference with his offensive PIPM going through the roof and him being the actual Bulls leader in wins added over those last 10 games. Still, defensively, there's a problem, but the offense really switched when his efficiency turned on. So while I do think, and if I was redoing my dynasty rookie ranks, he would be significantly higher. He'd probably be ahead of Barrett. He'd be ahead of Garland. Did I have him ahead of Garland anyway? I think he'd be pushing up to that top three, top four. But overall, that lack of assists, the lack of steals, the potential wobbliness with the field goal percentage is a bit of a concern for him long term, as will he ever be able to push to a top 30 guy. But he's going to go in the top 100 of every draft next season. He's probably going to have multiple top 100 seasons and probably going to have multiple top 50 seasons, but I think that probably comes when the shooting stabilizes in about 2 or 3 years' time. But it has been a nice little 10 game run, but we have to remember the first 55 were pretty rough for Coby White. So how do we base that? Which one is that? Is this just a hot 10 game shooting stretch? Because that's really what's changing, plus a big boost in minutes and usage. And while the minutes can stick, can the usage stick along with the efficiency boost? But there's nothing else that's really coming there, so I guess that's the concern. Let's talk Chris Dunn, because he is going to be a restricted free agent heading into this offseason, has the knee injury that's put him out for the rest of this season. He was a big surprise this season, not with anything he did offensively because he was still rough, but the fact that he played 25 minutes a game, I was confident that he would not be in the Bulls rotation or even on the Bulls roster to begin this season, but he started plenty of games as a small forward. He averaged only 7 points in 25 minutes, but two steals and 3.4 assists. His field goal percentage was not great, but it was on low attempts. He still can't hit threes, and that's where I worry about what Dunn can do in the future. What sort of a player is he? Can he be a steals streamer? Which really, that's what he is this season, one of the best guard defenders in the NBA. Also, one of the worst offensive point guards in the NBA, and that's the concern you've got to have there at a position where offense is more important than defense. But he did play a lot at small forward. But of course, we're talking about a situation here where White didn't get the big role until later on. We're talking about a situation where Porter was out all season and that enabling Dunn to get those minutes. Will he come back in Chicago and be a 20-minute a night guy off the bench? Yeah, I could see him doing that. Is there the real long-term value in him as a dynasty guy? Will he ever figure it out? I don't think so. He's 25 years of age already. Actually, he's just turned 26. We are looking at maybe another couple of years of him being a decent enough steals guy, but I don't look at him as a long-term option for fantasy leagues. Denzel the Hammer Valentine, inexplicably out of the rotation to begin this season and had some good moments, averaging 1.3 triples a game, shooting 34% from deep. But overall, he's just too slow, too unathletic to be a long-term starter really anywhere in the NBA. I thought he was better than what the minutes would suggest, better than, say, Ryan Arcejacano for sure. But the fact that he just didn't play, and again, some of that is to do with the Shadow King himself, that does put a bit of a dampener on Denzel, who is, again, a little bit of an older rookie. He's over 26 now, so he's older than Chris Dunn. I don't think there's much in terms of his long-term value that we need to be getting too excited about. Similarly with Chandler Hutchison, he's in a little bit of a different situation because he is only in his second season, but an injury ruined his year. He's out for the season with that shoulder injury. Well, he's out for the alleged season. We don't know when the season's going to be around. He only played 28 games this season. Offensively, he's still a disaster. I think that's fair enough to say. Like, I just don't think he's really been very good offensively. He's the 308th ranked player this season. The shooting hasn't really come around from his days at Boise State. He's not doing any playmaking. The defensive stats aren't really very strong from him at all. Although, actually, that's not true. The steal rate is pretty good. 1.8 steals. Doesn't block any shots. Efficiency's rough. The free throw is bad, 59%. I don't really look at Hutchison as being any sort of long-term starter on a solid team. Again, he was a guy very much like Valentine, whose statistical translations coming out of college looked okay, mainly because of his high assist rate from a wing position, which is a pretty solid thing, but I don't really see him ever translating into any sort of impactful player. The next guy we talk about,
Big Shaq.
Big Shaq Harrison, another one of these young players who's already 26. Like Chris Dunn, Harrison is an absolute fiend for steals. He has had some real big games towards the end of the season. But if Dunn comes back, like, where is Harrison fitting in? Like, there's just so many of these Harrisons and Valentines and Arcejacanos and Dunns in this 26-year age range. Arcejacanos the same age, who all do similar things, struggle offensively, and can do things with steals. Maybe Valentine's not included in that group. But Shaq is a guy that, when he's forced into a role, he will get steals and they will come in big-ass bunches, and that's what he does. Let's talk at least about a younger guy now, Adam Okoka, who we didn't see very much this season for the Bulls. He only played in 11 games. He's a guard out of France, and a guy that I didn't really expect to be seeing. And he had that one real explosion of a game where he came in and scored about like 12 points in 2 minutes in a garbage time of a game. But he's at least a name to take a look at, just because he is one of the younger players on this team who isn't in a large role. He only averaged, though, 11 points in the G League in 32 minutes a night. He shot 31% from the field. He shot 69% from the line.
Giggity!
And nothing else is super impressive. Defensively, I think he held up all right when he was playing with the Bulls. But overall, I just, what do we see from Adam Okoka? Can he ever be a player that gets converted from that G League contract? I think he can be solid enough offensively to be maybe a 10th or 11th man, but I don't really seeing it go too much further than that at the moment for Okoka. All right, let's move on now, talk about the next team that I'm going to talk about on today's show, and that is the Washington Wizards. I'm going to be joined a bit later on to speak about Troy Brown with Locked On Wizards host Troy Halliburton. So we'll talk about the rest of these Wizards players now. Let's start with their first pick in the last NBA draft, and that is Rui Hachimura. Hachimura, a lot of people seem to really like what he's done this season. I am not a lot of people. I think he's been okay as a 30-minute-a-night player. He's the 156th ranked guy, which is sort of, I think, where I had him coming into the season as a fantasy asset, about that area. But what does he do, or what can he do better? I know there's the argument, he's only new to basketball, but I've also seen studies where people think that that doesn't necessarily translate as a general rule to people getting better later in life. So Hachimura averaged 13-6, half a three, 0.8 steals, 1.7 assists, 0.2 blocks, 48-83. Now those percentages are solid. They're not blow your mind fantastic, but there can be an improvement in that field goal percentage. But it's everything else. No threes, no assists, no steals, no blocks. He has the second worst PIPM on the team, only beat bested by the former starting point guard Isaiah Thomas, who was a negative 2.9. Hachimura was negative 2.35, which is not uncommon for rookies. But where does he get better? Like, what is he going to start doing well? Will he ever start blocking shots? I think he's had about six of those all season. Yeah, steals, assists, three-point volume. Will any of these things come? Can he become a high-usage hub of the offense? I don't think any of those things are possible for Hachimura. Because really, to be a good fantasy player, if he's not going to assist, steal, or block, or hit threes, or get to the line in big volumes, then he needs to be a 27% usage guy that scores 20 points per game. And I just don't think he's got that ability in him to do that, or a team would be in their best interest to use him in that way. So that gives me some pause with his value. He's already 22. Not that that's old, but he's also not 20. So I worry about where he comes. Now, he does have a pretty high name reputation amongst a lot of people. So I do think that you can, if you are in a dynasty league, trade him away and get pretty good value back. Because I don't... Look, what does he peak at? Can he be a top 100 guy? Maybe. Maybe he can be a top 80 guy at best. I just don't really see it with Hachimura. And I realize that there are going to be people who are very vehemently against that opinion and that they don't agree with that and they think he can be... He's going to develop all these things and you've got some numbnuts out there. Maybe he's Kawhi Leonard or Giannis Antetokounmpo. I'm pretty sure he's not. Like I'm pretty confident in that. So I wouldn't be putting that. So now I've been wrong on plenty of things before. Maybe I am wrong on Hachimura. But again, what I thought about him coming into this season has borne out exactly as I thought it would pretty much for him. And I don't really see the path for him to change all those things and do that. So that's where my concerns are with him. Isaac Bonga started quite a few games this season. I think a lot of people would be surprised that he was doing that. Now, he has got some unbelievable type advanced numbers. Defensive PIPM absolutely through the roof. 1.83, the best on the Wizards, even ahead of Yan Mahinmi. And yeah, some of his future projection stuff looks really, really good. Can he ever get there? I think that's the concern. But in terms of a low-cost dynasty asset, if anything sort of comes, he's still only 20, Bonga. If anything comes together with him on the offensive end, I think he can pass a little bit from a wing position as well. Then that's interesting. Now, he had a couple of interesting games this season. He had a 17-10 game against the Raptors in 29 minutes. But I'm most drawn to this game where he played 14 minutes against the Knicks and had 13-5 with 3 threes, 3 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. Now, that's still really low minutes, but everything that he did there in that game was why these advanced metrics and projection systems really love him. It's an interesting thing to look at his numbers and you go, well, he hasn't really shown it. And then he comes out with that one game and you go, well, it is only one game, but does that mean anything for him going forward? Like that is the concern or the worry. Now, 538's Raptor projection system has him listed as a category future all-star. They think he's got huge value, 5-year market value of over $62 million. Comparing him to guys like potentially Trevor Ariza's on his similarity score, Gerald Wallace is there. So he's one of those guys, again, that I'm not sure he ever gets there, but the ability for him to be disruptive defensively, to pass the ball, and if the shooting can come along for Bonga, there is still a hope there for me. It's not high, but he's shooting 40% from three, or admittedly, ridiculously low volume. But there are just some things there that get me intrigued with him as a low-cost dynasty player. Tom Bryant, on the other hand, is a guy who I think is overvalued. I don't see Bryant as a long-term starter in the NBA. I have said this plenty of times, and his season's been ruined by injuries mainly, but also by the way Brooks has used him in terms of coaching, only 24 minutes a night. I thought that this season and maybe next season would be his best fantasy seasons. They'd play him 30 minutes a night with very few options around, and he'd put up big numbers. But he sucks defensively, and I just don't think that he is a long-term fit as a NBA starting center. Another negative PIPM type of player who's defensively there are some real concerns with him. He's been a disappointment this year, again, mainly through that broken foot that he had two issues with during the season. And prior to that, he was putting up some okay numbers. He had a couple of 20-point games, a couple of 20-10 games, and he can do that. But then we saw after the injury, the minutes kept really low, and that's really dropped down his overall production. Can he be a big numbers guy? Sure. If he's in a role where he plays 30 minutes a night, the numbers will come. But overall, we've got to look 5 years down the track for someone like Bryant, because a team that then starts to look to become good, he's not your answer at center. And I think that's going to cause him to be in a 20 to 24 minute a night role in the next, you know, 3 to 4 seasons, maybe down to 20 minutes, which doesn't really put him in that top 100 zone. I think you'll be able to look at a lot of these guys, and there'll be people out there who go, well, he was injured this season, watch him go back to being a top 50 beast next season. And that's a real possibility, depending on what the Wizards do at center. Mihinmi will be gone, what they do with Pashniks, and what do they do with Wagner in there as well. But again, long term for Bryant, I think this is a potential short, sharp peak that then falls off and he disappears. As for Flaming Mo Wagner, really surprising start to the season for Wagner. He was getting every shot that he wanted pretty much coming off the bench. And then he had an opportunity when Bryant went down, and then he got hurt himself with a twisted ankle and never really got to show what he could do. Now, he's a 58% shooter on 82% from the line, 34% from three. Like, that sort of efficiency is unbelievable. His true shooting is 67%. Last year was at 53%. So we're talking about a huge, huge jump. But he's a guy, like we talked earlier with Lauri Markkanen, just really low defensive stats, which is a concern for a guy playing center. 0.9 blocks per 36, only 2.5 assists per 36. Rebounding, shooting, he's fine. He's a really good three-point shooter, but again, low attempts. He's not taking enough. I'd like to see him getting close to Jaren Jackson type volumes. He has 6 threes per 36. Around that level, he's at 3.4 triples per 36, despite hitting them at a completely fine 34%. Wagner still has some defensive issues. I think he's probably a better defensive center than what Thomas Bryant is, though. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him develop and actually take the role over Bryant in years to come. They are the same age. They both came from the Lakers in that cap space clearing trade that the Lakers made, along with Bonga. But it's hard to get a full... I don't think any of them are long-term starting center options on a good NBA team. But I think Wagner's offensive ability, which is pretty strong, but a solid enough defensive numbers, does at least push him into a role where it could be a timeshare situation with him and Bryant as we move forward. But for now, he's just someone to keep an eye on. Can this ridiculous efficiency that he put up this season be able to continue? That's the big concern, but I don't really see much from him as a top 50 guy. Onsesh Pasnik, another center who was that player that was drafted by the Sixers in a really confusing trade a couple of years ago, didn't come over. They released him without ever signing him, and he joined the Wizards on a two-day, and I thought he played okay during his time there. Defensively, I think it was all right. Offensively, still a bit of a struggle. Initially, there was the ridiculous comparisons between him and Porzingis because they both came from Latvia. Of course, Pasnik can't shoot at all and is a shot-blocking, sort of ground-bound type of center. I thought he just did what he did, like being a double-double-ish type of guy, averaging 13 and 9 per 36 on 53%. Like, it's okay. He had some solid enough games, a 17 and 6, a 13 and 8 in limited minutes, but just another one of these really middling type centers who held up okay defensively and had struggles offensively, can't do it on both ends of the court. But Pasnik at least showed that he can be a backup NBA player. The next guy we look at, Admiral Schofield, who was pushed into a role this season, one of absolutely the worst fantasy players of the entire year, averaging ranked 424th, averaging 3 points per game, assists and rebounds, steals and blocks really non-existent, didn't hit free throws very well. His PIPM was the third worst on the Wizards. Offensively, he just really struggled. He is a little bit older as well. He's already 23. I don't have huge faith in Admiral Schofield really even developing or staying in the NBA beyond the next 3 seasons, and the fantasy profile for him doesn't look the best. Let's look at Jerome Robinson, who did come across from the LA Clippers, didn't really do much with the Clippers, but I thought his time with the Wizards was a little bit better. Defensively, he held up okay, but I think one of the worst lottery picks in recent times by the Clippers. Never should have been picked at that sort of an area. Came in and had that one really big game here for the Wizards where he played 36 minutes against the Hawks, 14-6-5 with 3 steals and 2 triples. And you go, that's okay. And then he missed the next game, and then he started and played 14 minutes in the next one. I don't think he's a point guard. He can't run an offense. The defensive stuff, again, it's been probably a little bit better than expected for Robinson, but I don't really see him as being able to hold up long term there. I don't think he's ever going to be a starter caliber player or even a 25-minute a night sort of guy on a regular basis. Not someone, again, a guy that I really didn't like coming out of college into the draft. Didn't like his fantasy translations there. And nothing has changed to have my opinion alter on that. The last guy I want to talk about here before we bring Troy in is to talk about Garrison Matthews, who did have a couple of decent performances for this team. He's a 23-year-old rookie on a two-way deal who's averaging 5 points per game, shooting an astonishing 91% from the line on two free throw attempts per game. And those two free throw attempts per game is the thing that really stands out there, because he did have that one game where he went to the line 13 times and hit 12 of them. That was his big game against the Heat, where he had 28 points with four triples, not much else. That game, when you're playing so few minutes, it does really skew everything that you're doing. I think he showed again that he can be a player who can be pesky in the NBA, who can hang around and do a couple of things. Can he ever push into being a good NBA player? I think the odds of that seem pretty low to me. And what does he do that would make him a good fantasy player? Like, I'm not really sure what there is there. The steal rate's okay. No assists, rebounds low. He's hitting threes at a high rate, at a decent volume, 41% on 7 attempts per game, which is pretty good. But if we look at what he did in the G League, he played 17 games for Capital City Go-Go, 11 points, 30% shooting, under 2 rebounds, 1.3 assists. Like, they are rough as shit, those numbers. They are not good at all. Defensively, low usage, poor net rating. They're just really, really bad numbers that I think is really skewed. His overall production this season is skewed by that three-game stretch that he had, especially that Miami game, and then he got hurt himself, but where he came out and just shot the absolute lights out, which to me is just not something that we should have any expectation of Garrison being able to do as we move forward. Now, let's bring in the host of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Troy Halliburton is here, and we're going to talk about Troy Brown with you. Troy, a guy that I think had some decently high expectations this season. There was a thought that maybe he would open the season as the starting small forward. He had that calf strain in the preseason, but it's never really happened for him. He's averaging only 25 minutes a night so far this season. He barely played as a rookie, so it's been a step up from that, but to me, I'm a little bit disappointed in not only how Brown has played, but in the role he's been put in. How do you see it from someone who's watching a ton more Wizards than I am?
Well, as somebody who has been watching a lot of Wizards basketball and actually being around the team, I think that I would agree a lot more with your sentiment that I am not happy with the role that he's been put in. And so I look at the production that he's had. You know, he's played a lot more minutes. He's playing 24 minutes a game right now, and he's averaging a little less under than 10 points a game. But, I mean, he's shooting 45% from the field, 34% from three-point range. And really, I think that he's proven to be an adequate role player, especially for a Wizards team who was playing G League players for the majority of the season because of injuries and just poor roster construction to begin with. But I think that, like you said, I think that his opportunity that he's received has not really been indicative of the production that he can put out for the Wizards.
It's been interesting to see that role and how they just won't push him up towards that 30-minute mark. Now, Isaac Bongo, I talked about him a little bit earlier on this show about how his advanced numbers are absolutely through the roof. Now, on the other side, Brown's stuff isn't as positive. He's got a negative PIPM offensively and defensively. His on-off stuff is a negative as well. He's a negative 2.9 there when the guys playing over him, like Bongo, are a significant positive. Garrison Matthews is bigger as well in that sort of an area. But I think what Brown does, and one of the concerns with Brown heading into the NBA was his shooting. But that's been okay. Is it just Scott Brooks not having the faith in him? What does he need to work on to develop into that that bigger sort of role? And can it come in the next couple of years?
Well, I think it's exactly that. I think that Scott Brooks doesn't have the requisite faith in him, and so really Troy Brown really hasn't had the opportunity to show what he can do. And so yes, his minutes per game are up, but when you look at his on-off numbers, you have to look at like the full scope of the fact that, okay, the Wizards roster was already poorly constructed, so they don't have a lot of talent. So if he's playing, he's not started again, he's only started 14 of 61 games so far this season. And so he's playing a lot with these second units. And so, like, you know, he's playing a lot with guys who, you know, who may or may not even be in the NBA next year. And so, of course, his on-off numbers are going to look like that. But I also look at not only the people that he's playing with, the role that he's been put in to play in. So he came out of Oregon as a guy who was known as a ball handler. He was a bigger point guard when he was in high school. And so what has happened is that Scott Brooks has yet to really relinquish any ball handling duties to Troy Brown. And so I know that Troy has talked about this extensively over the past, the fact that, you know, he feels more comfortable with the ball in his hands. And yes, and that's part of the reason why the Scott Brooks decided that it was best to put him in with the second unit instead of with the starters, because at the beginning of the season, when the Wizards had Isaiah Thomas and Bradley Beal both in their lineup, there was really no opportunity for Troy Brown to ever have the ball in his hands. And when he had the ball with the second unit early on in the year, he didn't have good guys to, you know, really facilitate to and really showcase his skills. But like I said, his individual numbers, his shooting percentages, his rebounding rate as a guard, averaging 5.3 rebounds. Like, he does things on the court that provides a winning basketball feel. But I think this is very similar to how Scott Brooks treated Tomas Satoransky, another bigger guard who he never really had a lot of faith in. And, you know, Scott Brooks, because he was a former player and he was a former smaller point guard, he has this affinity for smaller point guards. And so he will play those guys, Trey Burke, Brandon Jennings, you know, a lot of different guys. Ty Lawson, who came in and played in front of Satoransky.
That was ridiculous.
He will play all of these guys in front of a Troy Brown or a Tomas Satoransky.
One thing I think that's probably hurt Brown a little bit in those 14 games that he has started, his shooting has been abysmal. He's hit 18% of his threes during that time, just 42% from two during that 14-game starting role. And I think that hurts some of that. Yeah, and we've seen, again, you talk about Satoransky, but you even saw it last season when Thomas Bryant started to come along, and even this year, yeah, Brooks keeps their minutes down and doesn't really push through. And we should have been seeing more of this from Brown last season. So I do have a level of faith in him that I don't think Scott Brooks is going to be the Wizards coach in the next 3 years. I think don't think he's going to last that long. And the Brown could develop as that player. The thing that worries me from a fantasy point of view is, can he ever push that usage up? Can you ever see him being a player who gets a decent chunk of usage on a solid team?
I definitely believe that Troy Brown can be a player who can grow as his usage grows. I think that he is, it's been evident in the small amount of minutes that he's played that he can be a guy who does winning basketball things on the court. So he's a competent defender. He can shoot at a proficient level. He can ball handle and create for himself and for others. And he can rebound at an above average rate for a guard. I think that, honestly, if he were to be put in a position, whether it be him being traded to another team or the Wizards getting a new coach and running a new system, that he would be an efficient player in an increased role.
Yeah, I can see him being some of the, along sort of a Kyle Anderson line, but I think he can improve that usage and handle the ball a little bit more. So there is some potential top 100 fantasy upside there from Troy. Troy, thank you for coming on and talking about Troy Brown with me, and everyone can catch all the Wizards stuff over on Locked On Wizards. Thanks for jumping on with me.
All right. Thank you, Josh.
And guys, that will do it for me today. Don't forget, subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Give it a follow, give it a like, give it a subscribe. All of those things really help the show out a lot. Hope everyone is staying safe out there. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.